You're listening to a CNA podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Work It. Hope you had a good work week. Adrian, did you follow the saga of your favorite new toy, ChatGPT's founder, Sam Altman? What struck you about him being fired from his own company?
Firstly, the entire story is really like a roller coaster ride.
It's like a Hollywood
thriller
movie.
Screenplay. For those of you who may not be aware, So Sam Altman is one of the co-founder of OpenAI,
who created
ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. He got the boot over, quote, communication issues.
Yeah.
The clash of goals between profit, AI, safety, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The drama escalates with big investors, including Microsoft, rallying for his return. Negotiation goes south. There's an interim CEO that lasted 72 hours.
Yes.
So long story short, Altman is back. But of course, it raised a lot of eyebrows and triggered unrest about this whole open AI thing. And the majority of the board threw in the towels in the process. So a lot of actually unanswered questions if you think about it. Why the initial firing? I think it's just like an unfinished chapter in a mystery novel. So I'm really waiting to see what's part two and what more we can learn from.
That's right. He's been asked like several times, can you tell us why you were fired by the board? And then he says, no, I can't talk about it. It's an investigation, etc. So this was when I was struck by the fact that boards are quite important. Suddenly it became like, what do boards do, right?
Exactly. So who are these folks? What do they do? Do they have the power to hire and fire?
So to give us answers to all our curious questions is Wong Su-yen. She is a multi-hyphenate in the best sense of the word. She's a keynote speaker. She's a thought leader. She's an advisor to Fortune 500 companies. And of course, she serves on several boards as well. Welcome to our podcast, Su-yen.
Thank you for having me. So great to be here.
Before we get to the board business, perhaps you can help us to understand a bit about yourself. Let's start with the time when you left Singapore at 16 to study music. So between that and now as immediate past chairperson of Singapore Institute of Directors, what happened in between?
Yeah, okay. That's a great question because quite a lot, clearly. When I left Singapore, I wanted to focus on pursuing a craft. And so you're quite right. I studied music, but actually it was music and computer science. It was a bit of a hybrid. From there, I then moved into a marketing role for a high-tech company. Mm. I understood the product. I understood the technology. I then decided, which I had never thought of before in my life, that I should go back to business school because I was doing marketing. Let's go figure out what I'm actually doing. After business school, I then went into the world of strategy consulting, where basically you're there to help companies solve problems, which I guess is the segue back into boards, basically how you think about driving growth and managing risk and so forth. Mm. And so having done that for 20 over years in the US, in Thailand, in Hong Kong and Korea and China, finally made my way back to Singapore. And to the point of the question that you just raised, I started serving on boards around almost 14 years ago, about thereabouts.
Oh, wow.
So that then moved me into a new space as well of being able to contribute to organizations in a different way.
Yeah.
So that's the short story.
That's the short story. But you know, music and computer science, I think there is a link.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's technical, right?
Well, research shows, apparently, although it's not something I've actually studied myself, that actually the part of the brain that mathematics and music use are actually quite similar.
See?
And if you actually look at some of the composers, like go back into Bach and some of the way they compose, it's actually quite structured and mathematical, quote unquote.
Yeah. No wonder I bet on either of them, because it's all on the same side of the brain.
Side of the brain it might be.
Me too.
There is structure. I used to tell people jokingly that because they both involve keyboards, but obviously it's much more than that.
Okay, so I know this sounds silly, so please pardon me. My impression of boards is strictly confined to one of my favorite shows on HBO called Succession. I don't know whether you guys have seen it. Mm-hmm. I love it. And I have this impression that boards are quite opaque. Employees have no idea who they are and how they're chosen, what powers they have. So let's start with a 101. Why do boards exist?
I think it's helpful to take a look back into history. Like, how did they come about to begin with?
Yeah.
And actually, they started out with the old guilds and trade organizations, where basically there were craftsmen who wanted to have their interests represented.
Yeah.
And if you have, say, thousands of blacksmiths or whatever it is, you can't all be talking at the same time. So you choose people to represent your interests.
Right.
And that was a precursor of the idea of a board where you have people to basically protect your interests. Now, if you fast forward a little bit to the Dutch East India Company, they were actually the first company to be publicly traded, essentially. Yes. So now all of a sudden you have shareholders, right? So shareholders similarly wanted their interests to be represented. And so therefore this idea of a board came about, which is to help represent the interests of the shareholders. And of course, now we talk about stakeholders more broadly. That's a bit of the origin story of how boards came about. And they're really there to help look after, therefore, the performance of the organization, the growth of the organization, and the interests for whom the organization represents.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, especially if you're dealing with something very important. For example, the ChatGPT, that whole saga, right? And because AI is becoming so important to our lives. So obviously, I understand that the board's role is very clearly defined. They want to protect and make sure that the company doesn't run away in all kinds of weird directions.
That also means that board would only be relevant for publicly listed companies?
I was just going to jump into that. That's a great point, Adrian. Actually, boards are relevant for all kinds of organizations, including nonprofit organizations. So as a nonprofit, for example, so you take that, and OpenAI obviously had a structure that was sort of a hybrid mission. But if you take just a pure charity nonprofit organization, they need to look after the interests of their beneficiaries and also of their donors, right? Because they get, or maybe even public funds, right? So therefore, you have interests that are quite broad-based. And so a purpose of a board is to safeguard those interests. So it could be for any kind of organization.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So my next question is, I'm asking on behalf of a friend, what are the typical pathway for someone to become a board director? I do notice that most board directors are former CEO, former senior leader of ABC company. Is it just specific for such persona, or is it actually open to everyone who may have an interest to become a director?
I think the starting point really is to think about what is it that an organization needs. So if you think about what organizations need, they're very, very varied, right? So if you're a publicly listed company, you need to understand, obviously, how the business functions. You need to understand the legal regulatory compliance framework. If you're with a nonprofit organization, you might need to understand something about the beneficiaries. Yeah. So some nonprofits, for example, have members of the board who are themselves beneficiaries to provide a lens on what it's like to be living with a particular disability, for example. Yeah. Right? So there are many different pathways, but it really depends on what the organization needs. And so to your point around background, so let's say when we take this into a business context, historically, there have been a lot of board directors who have come from either legal or accounting backgrounds.
Yes. Yeah,
and the reason for that is because obviously there are legal and regulatory frameworks that one has to adhere to, including one of the key responsibilities for a board of a business is to ensure its financial stability, sustainability, and viability. So the financial understanding clearly is important. So as a board director, those skills are important, but at the same time, increasingly you start looking at boards who are saying, well, hang on, we really need to understand more about digital, for example, because it's not just about managing the risk or the downside risk, but the possible risk of not transforming.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? So then you need to understand the future. You need to understand digital, being that this is a podcast on Workit. You need to understand the people dimension.
Yeah.
Right? So because people are actually a huge risk factor in that sense, a human capital risk.
Yes.
So therefore, that starts bringing in a very broad spectrum of people into that potential directorship pool. Having said that, as a board director, you are responsible for everything that happens in the organization. So even if you don't have an accounting background, you need to understand the finances. Vice versa, even if you don't have an HR background, you need to understand something about the people dimensions. And you can talk about sustainability, you can talk about digital, you can talk about a lot of the big trends.
Right. I'm just curious though, I'm like, how do companies go about looking for members? Whose job is it to assemble the board, so to speak?
Great question. How does that happen, right?
How does it happen?
Okay. For many organizations, the actual board is voted in by either the shareholders or maybe members. So they have to be presented, because you're supposed to be representing their interests, right? Back to that point, they need to be presented. But the question then is, how do they get onto the slate to begin with?
Yes.
Right, okay. Best practice would be you have a nominating committee, and this nominating committee is a subset of the board, and their role is to think about a few things. Number one, where is the organization headed? Number two, what does that mean in terms of the kinds of experience and backgrounds that we need represented on the board? Number three, what do we currently have on the board and what are the gaps that need to be filled? You start with that and then you start going out and saying, well, how do we actually find these people?
Yeah.
Good practice would be to go to an external source. For example, the Singapore Institute of Directors has a board match, board appointment service where you can say, we're looking for these kind of directors, kind of backgrounds. And then you go through lists of people who apply.
You have a list of people.
Who would apply. Exactly, people apply. Mm-hmm. And then the company can go through a typical recruitment process, essentially. Search firms also do help with this.
Oh.
Executive search firms, just like you would place a CEO or a head of marketing or a head of finance, start looking at potential board candidates. Of course, boards would also tap into who they know. Right. So who to think of. And that's normal. That's natural. And one should obviously draw on that pool as well. Where I think it's really important is to make sure that you don't only focus on people that you know, because that's not a very objective process.
That's the easiest way, right?
It's the easiest way.
But it's also the old boys club, right?
Exactly. True. And especially if you start with just who do I know, as opposed to the first few questions, what is it that we need?
Yes.
Right. And what's the right profile that we can serve on? And there's no way that you can know everybody anyway. Building in this diversity on boards is really critical to good board performance.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that women on boards, very important.
Yes.
Minorities are important, just to bring the diversity of views.
Exactly. Different backgrounds. And actually, this comes back to Adrian's earlier question. Different professional experiences as well. You want to make sure that you have, like I said, HR people, tech people, sustainability people, women, minorities, people with an international exposure, international background, people who understand the industry. So it's actually about constructing that team that has a combination of these skills and experiences that makes sense.
I'm curious though, because you mentioned earlier on people from legal, finance background. Companies typically also have operational people who does legal, who does financial work. And if you look at these two functions per se, they are more of a science rather than art. So if it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. So what additional or different things could board directors from those spectrum bring to the company outside of what the operational crew can already bring to the company?
Great point. I think it's about providing two things. One is an added perspective. You're right that there is a kind of a black and white to a lot of what you look at. However, sometimes there may be a difference in approach. So just give you an example. If you're thinking about a situation where maybe there's been a whistleblower that's filed a complaint on something, for example, even though you look at it from a legal perspective, there may be three or four different ways to approach this particular issue. Yeah. So having backgrounds on your board that can look at it from different angles actually does help to complement what the operational and the management team can bring. So the board is there to help provide oversight, provide guidance, and also to provide an additional perspective.
I'm sure everybody would have read about Sam Altman. I was struck by the power of the board, right? So I think that's what people have on the back of their minds. Could the majority in the board actually get rid of a CEO? It sounds like something that happens in Succession, to be honest.
Well, actually, one of the key roles of a board actually is in constructing the management team.
Oh, wow. See, so they have power.
Yes.
So they can indeed hire and fire CEO.
Absolutely. It is part of their job.
Oh, wow.
They're part of the role of a board to actually identify and to measure performance and also to reward the performance of the CEO and the top management. Otherwise, how do you decide? Right? If it's so, CEO says, well, I think I'm going to pay myself this amount and everybody else enough. Right. So you need some level of oversight.
Yes.
And that comes from the board. So it is absolutely within the board's role to do that. What the board was doing was within their remit.
It's so interesting. I also read that the board also signs off on very senior hires.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, CEO and senior management.
Yeah,
team,
so C-suite.
C-suite typically.
Yeah, so you can actually veto and say, no, I don't think so. Or something like that.
Yes,
it's possible.
Yes, yes. It's so they are responsible for the hiring and the firing of the CEO. Obviously, in any firing situation, you generally don't want people to be surprised. So I think this is what
the
was a surprise, right?
Yeah,
I mean, this is whether you're firing an entry-level person or a very senior person, you generally want to prevent surprises. So I think that was probably something that wasn't handled very well.
Yeah.
However, it is within their role to hire and fire CEO.
That's something I learned today.
So one of the things that we've been really curious about is how many companies can you sit in or sit on? Because there's quite a story recently where there's this guy who became a director of 980 companies. Now, I need to let all the listeners know, I used to run a company. So every year they have this AGM thing and I have to sign like a dozen over documents. This guy have to sign the same dozen documents times 980 of them.
Wow.
Imagine the amount of signature. It's more than any accomplished...
I'm sure he paid somebody to do it.
Imagine you have to sign more than an accomplished author at a book signing event. So, Suyen, you consulted with many big names. How much is too much for an individual to sit on?
So many listed companies will put some limit around the number of other listed boards that you should sit on. The nuance here is that actually it doesn't take the same amount of time for every single company. For example, on when everything is going as per it should, there's a certain number of hours that one has to spend working with a company if you serve on the board. But let's say now the company is going through a merger and acquisition. Then the amount of effort will spike up exponentially if you're on the board. Or let's say you've just brought in a new CEO. Probably in that transition process, you're going to spend a lot more time as well. So that time variability is quite wide, depending on the organization. And so clearly, when you're a director, regardless of what type of a director you are, you need to understand what happens in the companies. And I think in this particular case, clearly 980 is impossible for this person to...
Maybe just 979. Really,
so it needs to be at a level where you can feel comfortable that you're actually understanding the affairs of the companies. And because you are responsible, you are legally responsible for what happens in the organization.
Yeah. I think in this case, there was some shady dealings as well.
From what I understand, some companies require a local director.
Oh, yes.
And there are businesses that just go around looking for all these nominee directors. You can just come on, just sign. Oh, but you'll be indemnified if things happen. But still, you sign it. So if things happen, you will still be liable to some extent.
Right? And that is really not taking the spirit of governance into consideration. And so that is true whether somebody serves on one board or 980 boards. Yeah. You want to make sure that as a director, you're not just there to sign papers and to rubber stamp, but actually to understand and to guide the company, right? And to support the company.
By the way, board members are paid, right? There's a compensation. You don't do this for free, right?
Different types of boards remunerate differently. So charity boards typically do not, understandably. For-profit organizations typically do.
That's great. From where I sit, which is several rungs on the lower deck of the ship, so to speak, I have no sense of how the board affects me or any of my co-workers or colleagues. We had thousands, right? Everyone from technicians all the way to presenters and the etc. So share with us your experience, right? Being on a board and making a difference to that company, first of all. Like, how does your work impact me? Number one. And number two, is there any way to measure like how good your work was?
So a board is responsible for strategy of the organization. It's responsible for financial oversight. It's also responsible for all the different risks that a company organization might face, right? Whether it's financial risk or talent risk. When you think about it that way, everything that the board decides does affect everyone in a company. Because if you think about strategy and you think about, well, are we going to do A versus B? That certainly would affect all the way down in the organization.
Like, for example, if we're going to expand into another country.
For example.
Right?
Great
and,
example.
Yeah. And then your people will have to then either you will need to hire or you give opportunity to current employees. To move.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's one example.
And so what the board does in that situation is to actually set, I mean, the board plays a really important role in setting the culture and the tone of the organization. So the example that you just raised, if the board says, let's ensure that we look after our people to make sure that people are given a chance to either reskill, upskill, choose to move into those spaces, that's one kind of a tone.
A
different kind of a tone is like, well, we're just going to make sure we want to focus on our moving locally to develop the local talent if you talked about moving to
the
country.
Yeah, maybe cost, right? For so, example.
Because
it might be cheaper,
it
right?
It could be cheaper.
So just hire whoever.
Correct. Or maybe you want to be more locally embedded. We don't want to send too many people from head office into this new country, for example, right, because it sends a different message, right? So there are many different types of outcomes that are possible. Not one is right or wrong or good or bad as such, but in that particular situation, what makes sense. So that would have a very direct impact on individuals. The other thing would also impact would be things like when you think about discussions around culture. A lot of boards are now starting to talk about organization culture. So what kind of culture do you want to build? How do you look at the CEO and the management team? And are they doing what they're supposed to do to build the kind of culture? Mm. Because if you don't have the right culture, how do you execute against your strategy? Yeah. So the work of a board is actually very directly linked to everyone on the ground level, at every single level of the organization. However, it may not always be so apparent because at the end of the day, execution and operational management is left to management.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the board plays a really important role in setting that direction and that culture.
Right.
And last question, having navigated through various roles and industries, what's one piece of advice you wish you had received before stepping into the world of boards?
Where to start, because I learned so much over the years. Okay, I think the piece of advice that I wish I had received early on would be to see board directorship as a profession unto itself. To the point that you made earlier, Adrian, many people think of it as, well, I have a very senior role and therefore the next natural, normal thing is to move into a board role, as a, seen as a progression in that sense. And yes, it is a progression in some sense. However, it is a profession as well, because if you think about the role of a board versus management, it's actually quite different. And actually, to be an effective board director, you need to let go of a lot of the tendencies and behaviors that you developed as an operating manager. So you draw on the expertise that you and the experience that you have, but go learn about what it takes to be a board director. Get a mentor about what it takes to be a board director. Build a new network and community within the board directorship community. So these are all elements that I learned along the way, but wish that I had had some better advice on early on.
Okay. There must be some favorite companies that you've been on, like really interesting work, because you have such a wide range of people that you consult with. You have to learn the industry as you go, right? I mean,
yes.
For example, it's pharmaceutical or it's media or it's tech.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing, I feel.
For me, I really enjoy the breadth and not just the types of industries, but also different ownership structures. So we started talking about that a little bit earlier. So if you're a nonprofit, you operate a particular way. If you're publicly listed, you operate a certain way. If you're private equity held, you operate, you run a different way. If you're government linked, you might have a different set of structures. If you're a family business, you might have a different way. So the ownership actually affects a lot of how the board functions.
Right.
And so I've learned an immense amount over the years about how to navigate in different types of situations.
I'm sure also boards have disagreements among the members, right?
And one should. One should have constructive differences, constructive debate and dialogue, because the easiest thing, you talked about rubber stamp earlier, Adrian, is you just agree with everything and you just rubber stamp everything. But that's not really fulfilling the role of the board, is it?
Yeah.
If you're there to try and provide that counterbalance, to challenge constructively and to help improve upon what's already there. So the best boards really are ones where you have a dialogue within the board and you have a dialogue with management together. It's a positive culture where dissent is not seen as a negative. But of course, as a board director, you also need to learn to know how to communicate that dissent, right? Right. So it works both ways, right? Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. Disagreements are par for the course.
And a good thing too.
Absolutely.
Because it shows that there's a lot of effort and interest in protecting the business.
It shows that you're vested. Otherwise, you would just say yes to
everything.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Or that you aren't engaging your brain. That's another one. You're not thinking about it. So you just go along with the flow.
Thank you so much, Suya. And I learned so much in this last 20 minutes or so that we've been talking. So Adrian, what's your takeaway?
I personally have sat on a few boards before and I really resonate with what Suya have shared. And I would hope that I've listened to her way before, because I made so much mistakes during my earlier years. I do not know how to navigate some internal politics, what's the different structure and all that. So yes, it is a profession and it does require a lot of work, which is why don't even think about sitting on 98 boards, let alone 980 boards. You can probably have time for maybe three or four, but it does require a bit of work for each of them. And it does have trickle-down effect on the direction that a company intends to take from there on.
My main takeaway is that as an employee, I've never really encountered even the board members, chairman. Sometimes they come and visit. And so I see like a group of people, but they're still very far removed. I hope that listeners take away what I took away, which is that in a way, your management needs a management. Mm-hmm. In my mind, right? It's like the watcher needs a watcher, right?
It's about checks and balances.
Right? So that we and all the people whose livelihoods depend on the organization are protected in that way. And I think that's the bottom line that I've taken away from. So a good board is a guardian.
It's a guardian and represents all stakeholders.
Yes.
Not only shareholders. Shareholders are important component of that, but stakeholders include your employees, your suppliers, the community, the regulators, the many stakeholders that one has to be mindful of, and the board is there to ensure that we're looking at all of those dimensions.
Therefore the composition of a board, I feel, is really, really central and critical.
Spot on.
Yeah, so please go and look at your board and who are they, who are your guardians.
Thanks for listening to Work It, and of course to our guest Su Yan for taking time out of a busy schedule to chat with us, and my thanks to the CNA podcast team that makes sure everything runs smoothly.
Thank you. A quick word before we go. I've started writing notes about our discussions on this podcast, and they are posted on LinkedIn. I usually give a summary and I give my own thoughts on the topic. So please do check it out. Follow CNA, follow me, follow Adrian. If you want a little bit of the behind the scenes extras that we talk about here. Till next week, be on your best work self.